Hi there. Welcome back to Define the Relationship podcast. Ted and I are on our third take here. We'll see if this is the one that goes.
Hi, everybody.
We're feeling a little overwhelmed with how to keep things concise. And there's a lot, I think, going on in our minds and hearts for trying to communicate what is important for this next class, and but also not try to feel frantic or rushed. So bear with us. Thanks for bearing with us.
So any quick impressions about our first class that we had this past Sunday?
I think there was a good start of conversation and inquiry about what kind of we want to get at. And I think the first thing that comes to my mind of what stood out to me the most was how much everybody seemed to be reflecting on, like, I want to get somewhere, you know, like almost this.
There was definitely a bias for action in people's perspective coming into the course, wanting to move to, to doing something about the situation of settler indigenous relationships in our community, and what can we do? So,
and that's there's nothing wrong with that. I think that it is where people are, but it also like want to kind of encourage us to slow down, and right now we're doing some of our own work, and so we can't rush ahead to the just get to the steps of what we have to do.
Is it fair to say that's maybe a settler mindset that we come with, that like we want to get to like break some ground, let's plant some crops, let's get to some harvest?
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, and I think maybe a reminder then as we begin the work today is that this is not just one issue among many in our society that we just want to fix. It is the root of everything, as what we're discussing revolves around the forces of divide and conquer and in colonialism. Mm-hmm. And maybe even as we come at this conversation, do we have kind of a mindset of, well, let's divide up and let's conquer this issue, let's get it right. Maybe something to be aware of.
Okay. So what are we going to dive into? We want to dive into
what's called the LBS model, which is landlines, bloodlines, and songlines. This is such important foundational work that Elaine and Chet have done in Healing Haunted Histories. So we're going to go through just very basic definitions of landlines and bloodlines and songlines, and invite you to do some work on these before Sunday as you have time for. And again, the thinking is that all of our lines, our landlines, our bloodlines, and songlines must be interrogated, not like in a violent way, but interrogated with curiosity and courage so that we can take the stories that we have devised, the narratives that we have kind of in our head, and think about, I wonder if we need to revise this line. Mm-hmm. Because again, we have to kind of reckon with the fact that we come at conversations with a Eurocentric mindset and with a colonial mindset. That's like, it's not about blame. It's just about, this is what we've been formed and misformed in.
Right.
And that needs to be kind of put on the table. We don't need to like have shame about that, but just like, this is just the reality. And so I think some of the humility is about being willing, being open to revising some of our stories.
Mm-hmm. And maybe just one thing I'd like to add to that is that we're familiar with the concept of truth and reconciliation in these processes. And really the work that we are being invited into and that we're going to work at in the next session and the one after that is to really focus on, well, what is the truth that, like, we know us, we have our own truth that we sort of think we know. And then we're going to ask maybe some bigger questions about some other truths that we might not have been aware of. Right. And put that all together and come to a sense of, okay, like, maybe there's an expanded understanding of what the truth is about our histories.
Yeah.
And so this landlines, bloodlines, songlines approach is going to help us get at some of that.
Exactly. So let's begin with landlines.
Right.
Landlines are... the thinking around where we have walked from and into. And so you've all, if you're in the course or if you're just listening as part of this, if you've chosen an ancestry line to think about, where did they walk from?
Mm-hmm.
What lands did they walk from and what did they walk into?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quotes from the book that I found really interesting about landlines is that landlines are both placed stories and stories of place.
Okay, so I understand what a story of place is, I think. It means the stories that we tell and understand about where our ancestors were and what took place there. So the stories of the place. What is a placed story? That, curious about that.
Well, for me, I don't know, maybe other people will have other responses to it. I'd be curious about that too. But a placed story might be more of, we've kind of placed ourselves, for instance, as Mennonites in a story of goodness.
Hmm.
A placed story of innocence, a placed story of ... So when you think about your stories of your families this week, maybe think about, like, what are the stories of place and also what are the placed stories?
Yeah. So are you saying that the place stories are kind of like our construction of our story to highlight certain aspects of our history that we want to highlight and maybe conceal or not talk about parts of our history that we don't really want to talk about, or maybe we don't even acknowledge or we're ignorant of?
Yeah, I think part of the work is to think about, like, what are the stories we love to tell?
Mm-hmm.
What are the stories that your grandparents or your parents love to tell?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the stories that nobody seemed to love to tell, or
right.
what, yeah, again, it comes to some of the omissions,
mm-hmm.
That we start wondering about or being curious about.
So, people in the course are being encouraged to track their ancestors' family line and, find out where they started and where they ended up and, some of the dynamics and factors around that.
Do you want to talk, Ted, a little bit about, there are a good chunk of people in the class and a lot of people in this area that come from a Mennonite Anabaptist background. Do you want to talk a little bit about that landline and get people to that fall into that category to think about a little bit about that story?
Yeah. So trying to be as concise as possible. So the Anabaptist Mennonite tradition began in the 16th century as a radical, small wing of the Reformation that was taking place in Europe. And, one of the main things that kind of came out of that tradition, was a perspective that put them at odds with the local kind of political ruling classes. And some of it had to do with unwillingness to go to war. Some of it had to do with their belief in adult baptism, which also put them at odds with their the places that they lived, because infant baptism was a way of bringing people into kind of the society. And so,
and church and state.
Yeah. So right. there was a real separation of church and state. And so part of that experience was an experience of persecution where they were treated poorly, you know, stories of martyr's mirror, burnt at the stake, drownings, things that were done. And it put them into a defensive posture where they were often looking for safe haven. And so, people in this tradition started in like Holland, South Germany, Switzerland, and started making their way east to places where they were given sanctuary. So one of the first places that they ended up in was in what was known as Prussia at the time. It would be today's Poland, Danzig, Poland area. And that was in the 18th century. And then they received a call from Catherine the Great, who was the Empress of Russia, invited to come into the Ukrainian steppes. It's an area that we know of quite well right now, because this is where the major conflict that's happening between Russia and the Ukraine is taking place. And many of those people ended up there, settling in colonies, with names that are probably quite familiar to us if we think about the colonies and some of the villages that we have here in Manitoba, like, you know, Rhineland, Burgtal, New Burgtal, Halbstadt. All these places were all place names in the Ukrainian steppes.
Or for my great-grandfather was Kortytsa.
Yeah.
It's also
so
familiar.
Two major colonies, Kortytsa colony and the Molochna colony. And yeah, and it's kind of there where many of our stories, like if we are following our ancestors, where our stories take place. So for me, I'm following my grandpa Dietrich, who I didn't really get to know. He died when I was, I think, about 3 years old, so I didn't really know him. He was born here in Canada, just about a kilometer outside of Altona, where we're sitting right now having this conversation. But his great-great-grandpa made a move from the Burgtal colony, which was a colony that had been set up to try to deal with there was a bit of a landless problem in that area. There wasn't enough property, land for the growing community. And so they tried to set up a new place where families could have some land to farm and stuff. But it was a bit of a failed experiment. The Burgtal colony, as I understand it from history, was the land was poor, people didn't make a go of it, and so they got word of potential opportunity in North America, both potentially in Canada, in Manitoba, or potentially in the United States. And so that's where their story of migration came. And so one of the things when we're thinking about our stories of our families and when moves happen is asking questions about what was pushing them to move. What were some of the factors? Was like in the Mennonite story, often persecution was a push factor where people were looking to find places where they could practice their faith without harm, without violence. And so those were push factors that moved them. And then at times there's also pull factors where they're saying like, we're looking for an opportunity to improve our lot, places where we might be able to do what we hope to do as a community. And so, there was pull factors. So when Catherine the Great invited Mennonites to come to the Ukraine, there was a sense of like, well, if you come here, you can practice your religion. You do not have to be enlisted in the military, so you can continue to be pacifist, nonviolent, and you can come and work the land in a way that we would find productive for this area. So those were pull factors. So it's always kind of a dynamic between things that are making it hard for us to be somewhere and that pushes us out of the place. And sometimes we look for opportunity and say, oh, that's we're being drawn, attracted to something.
So as people are thinking about their own lines and the push-pull factors, one of the things to be aware of is the dynamics of power. So how much power, social power, political power, economic power did your family have in that situation. And the book kind of talks about four different kinds of social powers of a migrant. And so if you want to look at those, that's on page 67 of the book. But basically, I'll just kind of run through them really quickly.
We'll also have these definitions in the workbook, so they'll be right there to play off of.
So the colonist has political and or economic project is to occupy and to expropriate foreign, quote, foreign land by a colonizing power. And so some of us may have colonists in our ancestry lines. Mm-hmm. The second would be opportunist. Opportunist has some degree of political and or economic mobility, privilege, and agency. So sometimes people move from Canada to the U.S. or to another country, and they're looking for an opportunity and have some amount of privilege and agency. The third category is the distressed immigrant. They are pushed or pulled beyond their control to leave in order to survive, improve, attain religious, political, or cultural freedoms, or reunite with family. So that's the distressed immigrant. And finally, forced relocation, where political and economic forces kind of traffic or otherwise drive people across borders through war and slavery and ethnic cleansing. And so, again, as you're thinking about your family history, your family lines, which category would they fall into? So that's something to think about.
Yeah, and it's a good to think about when there might be blurring of the lines between these different types. That sometimes there might be a distressed immigrant narrative, and yet there's also included in that a bit of an opportunistic kind of aspect as well, where they saw a possibility. And so it's good to kind of not think about it being one type or one story, but that often our stories are blended.
So there's really good questions on page 59 of the book. I think there's 10 questions there. So if you want to do some of your work with landlines, you can make your way through as many of those questions as you want, and maybe we'll spend some time on Sunday kind of discussing that. We're going to move on to bloodlines.
Okay.
Bloodlines so if landlines are about the places where we walked from and into, bloodlines are what we walk with. What have we inherited biologically, physically, and how do we carry it? It's kind of like our embodied story. Mm. And again, if you want to read the full chapters in the book about bloodlines, the first introduction to bloodlines is on page, I think, 106 in the book. It's actually before that. But why did I have 106 on here marked? Because it had a really good description about how when we're doing our bloodline work, it's kind of a double task of working through omissions and assessing stories that we have access to. So it's kind of like, they use archaeology metaphors a lot about how do we work with like fragments and circumstantial evidence, but or like a little bit indirect evidence. We have to kind of read between the lines. We have to do some imagining about our communal narratives that might not have been told or might not want to be told. So it's a critical approach, but not a lack of empathy. Mm. I think that's really important. It's not about, if we've just saw our ancestors with rose-colored glasses that now we see them as the villain. Like, it's not a binary like that,
right.
But how do we kind of think about the embodied story in our bloodlines?
Yeah. In fact, maybe it's actually the opposite. It's actually a tool for becoming more empathetic of stories because
yes.
it's unpacking more of the complexity and the reality of forced migration, for example. I mean, we see on our social media feeds and are on the news or on the internet or whatever, like we're seeing vivid, provocative photos and video on a regular basis of the trauma caused by war, violence, displacement. And we have, in our own community, we've welcomed people who have been forced from their places and have settled here because of those forced movements. And we start to become quite empathetic to the story that they found themselves in. And now we have to kind of go back, you know, it's 100, maybe 150 years before, and ask some similar questions about, you know, when war and social dislocation came to our ancestors' lines, you know, what all happened there? What's all going on? What maybe we know about or maybe we don't know about? Maybe we can learn from the big picture history and know that certain things happened and then ask, well, how did that fit into my particular personal line? So this is allowing us to become more empathetic actually to the story.
But I think it's hard. Like I still feel that I want to I feel very loyal to my ancestry, and I feel very kind of proud and very close to and bonded to my bloodline. And so interrogating it has sometimes felt really like hard. Like I find that my first, response is kind of defensive. Like I want to defend something. And so I just want to encourage us to pay attention to the things we feel as we're going through it. Because I think that's part of what also needs to be sometimes healed, or sometimes just get curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, lots more we could say about that, but the bloodline questions are on page 108 of the book. And again, they invite us into stories that have been silenced, dismissed, denied, covered up, and what feelings does it stir in you? So for some of us, that takes some courage to kind of go into those places. There's questions around how women and sexual minorities were portrayed, and how does some of the gendered violence in our history get addressed? And I know, again, in my family, that kind of, it brings up some pretty tender stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some hard work for us to do in the next couple of days as we get ready for Sunday.
Yeah, I just want to read this last paragraph from the Bloodlines 1 chapter, which just connects to what you just said.
Yeah, I love that.
Bloodlines work can sometimes feel like doing surgery on living flesh.
Yeah.
Exploring your family and community traditions requires care, but ultimately, burying family and community memory, especially regarding trauma, means trying to make sense of these traditions, not simply passing them on uncritically or timidly as mere artifacts or curios. A discipleship of decolonization invites us to reread our people's stories mindfully and to revise them compassionately through our commitment to healing and restorative solidarity.
Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's like a theological category here too that we need to acknowledge, and that is we understand the complexity of human nature, and we know in ourselves that, you know, we're both like hero and villain at different times, or in theological language, we're both saints and sinners. And this is this work is a way of sort of doing that also into our family lines and asking those questions, because they bring about insight that helps us to live more empathetically in our present time, especially when we think about Indigenous settler conversations.
Yep.
All right. Song lines. We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we're good. How many minutes do we have left?
Not as much as we would like.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Song lines embody what sustains us and empowers us. It's like the narratives, the cultural practices, the ceremonies that sustain and transform individuals and communities. How does song lines impact you, Ted? Like, what? How has that?
Yeah, like song lines are the tradition that has been passed on to us. And when I was doing this work in spring, in preparation for the course, I found that in the song lines section, I felt like there was quite a bit of dynamic tension that I felt in my the stories about songlines. So this is what I wrote at the time. I said, the Mennonite church was an anchor for my forebears. My dad told stories about the importance of church, and his mom, you know, living north of Winkler, walking into church. But he also told stories of the trauma and exclusion to members of his family that songline also brought. He talked about my grandpa Dietrich, who is the family line. Like he was excluded. He was excommunicated from that church because of social behavior that did not fit with the strict social order of that community, as the stories are told to me. And so there's both this resource and this traumatic story that kind of go together. And so I feel like sometimes the song line needs to be interrogated as well. Sometimes our, like, as you know, we're as Mennonite pastors, we are drawing on the song lines of scripture and the theological story of our tradition. And we have to often recognize that tradition needs to be decolonized. Like there's often we read that story from a place of privilege or from a place of power. And when we start to understand that often the actual biblical story is being told from the other side, it's being told from the bottom, not from the top, we realize how important it is to reinvigorate our song lines, because they can become a resource for us to do the work that we're doing, but also become a resource for us to be a part of healing and restoration with the communities that need to do that.
So we're thinking here about, like, what are the traditions of faith and resilience, the song lines that our ancestors leaned on? And I think both for you and myself, like, their faith, I would say that was their central song line of my parents. And it is the central song line for me that animates my life and my work. And also, I forgot what I was going to say, but what I hear you saying in kind of thinking about how those evolve, and that it can, faith can continue to be my central song line at the same time that I can, look critically or interrogate the song lines of, well, I don't know if I need to interrogate their song line. It was their song line. It was what animated their life.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is where the confluence of bloodlines and landlines and song lines kind of come together and kind of create a very unique story for each one of us. Like both of us are people of a Mennonite tradition, but there's a big major difference between our lines, because your family lines came from immigration post-World War II, forced migration caused by the World War. And at least on my dad's side, this is a group of people who made a choice to leave the Ukraine and come to Canada. You know, certainly there were pressures on the ground in Ukraine. But to be honest, one of the pressures, as I understand it from the history, was a sense that the world was kind of encroaching on them, and they felt they weren't going to be able to live their faith the way they wanted to live it. It wasn't war. It wasn't violence. It was a sense that there was encroachment on them from the government, that maybe some of the privileges they had would be taken away, or they just felt like economically it wasn't going to work here. And so that tints the songline, because there's a sense of we need to go places where we can do our faith the way we want to do it. You know, it's not being willing to adapt to the world around it. There were Mennonites that decided to stay, and some of those ended up leaving in 1920s when the revolution happened, and they come with a different songline, I think. So there's lots of nuance and different characters of that. And
for me,
so you're just kind of like, let's, it's sort of like an act of, well, being honest about what was going on.
Yeah. For me, it was also interesting to look at some of the things I initially kind of wrote down as what came to mind for me when I think about songlines for me. So I had like my Anabaptist faith, language, and especially it's so interesting. I feel it even more and more, like since my dad passed away, every time I spend the night with my mom, I read the German devotion, the Blatt, and I like love it. I love to let my tongue kind of lean into the German language. There's something very unexplainable to me about that. And
what was your first language?
German.
It was your first language. Yes.
Yeah. And, singing of the German songs and coming together around food. Like these are the things that I think of when I think about my songlines. And then I think about, oh, the songlines of indigenous peoples and like just how much connection there is there, right? Mm. Like to your faith, to your language, to your songs, your actual songs, to your foods. And so it's just a beautiful kind of way to take this songlines thing and think about our ancestors, think about ourselves, think about indigenous peoples. Yeah. So
I feel like in our conversations around this, that often that there's a bit of a push pull around, you know, like sort of like, wanting to celebrate songlines, and also kind of have a critique of our songlines. And, in a few weeks we'll have Elder David Scott, from Swan Lake First Nation. And one of the things he said immediately in our conversation, when he talked about the first contact between Mennonites in Southern Manitoba and the Indigenous people, was his perspective that while we knew that one of the song lines of the, he didn't use this language, but the song lines of the Mennonites were that they were peace people. They were nonviolent. We knew, he said, that they were not going to be amassing an army to come against us. And so we wanted to be in relationship with them. And so my first thought was like, yes, this is part of the songline. The nonviolence, the pacifism was a big part of our songline.
And it drew other people to wanting to connect with them.
Right. And at the same time, in the context of peace, shalom, the holistic peace of being, you know, was some violence that was done in the taking over of land, the perspectives about Indigenous people that were were a part of their understanding of Indigenous people. And so it's like, it's not just one thing. It's like, there needs to be a recovery. And so
yes.
I mean, this is for our healing as people. It's not about, about blame or saying like, well, you know, these were actually not good people. It's just that we need to expand our understanding of these song lines.
Yeah, good point. So questions, queries for nurturing the conversation around song lines are found on page 128 of the book. So that's a lot. If you work through the questions of landlines, bloodlines, and song lines, that's a lot of work. Do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this isn't meant to put like pressure on you. This is just the more we can kind of like dive into something, there's opportunity there for growth and learning. So do what you can and, come join us on Sunday for the next conversation. And again, welcome to those who aren't in the course, but just are along for the ride of the conversation. And maybe this course will happen again and again, and maybe next time will be your turn. So as always, feel free to pop us an email or something and let us know how what some of your questions are, how it's hitting you.
And just to reemphasize, if you're not in the class but are wanting to do some of this work, Healing Haunted Histories by Elaine Enns and Ched Myers is a wonderful tool to help you do some of this work. It's a beautiful compendium of not just history, but also understandings around trauma and restorative justice and ways forward in this conversation around Indigenous peoples and settlers. And so it's there's a lot there, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. So you know, pick it up.
Wow, we did it. Good job.
Yeah,
good job, hon.
Not too bad. A little overtime, but hey.
Okay, thanks for joining us, everybody.
All right, take care, everyone.